They have one big white good bang for the rifle or the weapon. He was a buffalo man. The Western show there in Airbnb.
Pawneeville.
And they had a kind of a, what do you call it, carnival or something like that. Well, I went down the street, so I was deputy, you know, big stuff, deputy. Here they got a guy, and he goes over and he starts eating grass, so you know everybody, eating grass. So I went, well, you know, I was going to work, what are you doing there? I was a deputy, you know. That's so I said, not a puppy, you better be taken care of, he might be worse than that. Four or five guys come out from the tents around there and they picked on me and only we had to call out the rest of the reserves to get me out of there. So anyway, they finished. Well, I found out he's a favorite with them. It's just a habit here, you know. No, listen, Brad. It was a habit. I didn't realize those things. Well, anyway.
Well, you're wonderful.
You were conservative in that direction.
That was a deal, see. Well, then Pawneeville was there. He was doing some shooting and everything else. I got acquainted with that. When I come down here, I think it was 1906 or 1907. In front of the old Crystal Theater, there was Pawneeville standing there, you know, the biggest light for the Western movie. Moving picture there? Advertising. And I walked by there and I stopped and looked at him and he looked at me, you know. He wasn't sure, you know what I mean? I wasn't sure. Well, I walked up and I started talking to him. I was Pawneeville. The guy I was working for that time was the ticket taker for the Crystal Theater. 10 cents you could go in there and see two movies and sleep all night. No, you couldn't. Reuben and Arnie, one time, you know, they were in an apartment or a couple rooms up over there.
You want to go to the
next to the bank?
Uh-huh.
An old guy stopped and banned me out here. And they all play the same tune, and these guys go through the parts manual with the tune. Port, right shoulder, left shoulder.
Unless you're expecting.
Now, all in rhythm. And there's bills, right? And then one north of there, and then one southeast. Well, in the summertime, they took Toronto. And they killed all of us, you know, and hang on the entrails and everything else. Right? Boy, it was a real thing. I can remember that yet.
Well, what do you think about the Indian business in the mirror?
Well, I think about it, I think they got a lot of it.
Yeah.
Everybody else. We bought that territory from Spain or France?
France.
Huh?
That was part of the territory.
Yeah,
it's Louisiana.
Well, who bought it from the Indians?
From the Indians?
Yeah, no, it's a sandwich story, you know.
The Indians are asking for it back.
With you and the army class that were in there, they were a half breed. We had a lot of Indians.
I had trouble with them.
Did you ever feel like you got to know any of them well?
Well, this guy I knew pretty well. He was a good scout. I was all the way along. I was an officer and he was a private. We was taking some stuff from Fort Riley to Fort. Emory Upton, Wisconsin, Camp Emory Upton. I was going to say garbage can, but I meant a baggage car. There was two of them. It was loaded with ammunition and stuff, see? And we were going down from Fort Raleigh to Camp Henry Upton at Sparta, Wisconsin, near Sparta, Wisconsin. And this Indian, he was a corporal. I was sorry, you see. And I was under this night. Pat brought Patterson, my pal, see, he was sleeping. Barnum said to sleep, and the other had to be under the explosion. Well, this Earls, Corporal Earls, was half reaching. I know they got to fooling around there, you know, and of course I have a fortune, you know, I was a young kid with my own cockier than hell. So I come in and he got started around, you know, and I ordered him out of the place and he wouldn't go, you know, he didn't like that. So I stuck my sword in him a little bit, see. So he got off. Well, the next day after that, I wasn't watching, he come back and he smacked him inside the end and knocked me down. Well, I got up there and I grabbed everybody, see. Well, then they had a little controversy about that. And it's up before the tribunal or whatever. And they found out that I was doing my duty, see, but he was, I don't know what he was doing. I can't figure it out. Anyway, he didn't like his men out. Well, we got just part of Wisconsin. We got back to Aberdeen after that. And I was back in Wisconsin. So he got a detail, a poor man. I was beautiful at the time. I was playing pool down the water in the old basement. And I didn't report the board of beautiful call on the sugar board. So he takes his squad down in the White Hotel after me. Imagine four guys in the car, 10 yell, they would go down Main Street and they got in front of my place or where my mother lived, and I kind of bulk up. We went right across the street and back, biting them, grasping their opinion. I got a kick out of it. Finally, Captain, what do you call it, come along, you put a stop with him. You come on, here. Well, I'd go with him, too, but this Earl, I didn't want him. That was funny.
Well, how about the time you beat the Canadian champion at school? Asked Marvel and the war at school. I like those stories. The mask, Marvel, and...
Well, the man might have had another guy next week. But the Canadian champion, that was on Elgin Pool. That is funny.
He was a Canadian champion and you beat him?
Champion, yeah.
Oh, it didn't do anything.
Yeah, I like to see him play pool.
You know, that's funny.
Do you play pool, Ray?
There is anything.
Let's play a game with him sometime, just so we can, I like
the
game.
Yeah, how about that?
Well, you should have told her about the mass marble up there at Lake Chief.
That was the time I got the $100, you remember that guy was talking about?
He came in there, didn't he, to challenge anybody in the place?
You know, he come in, he's parked outside in his car, he had a cue, you know, a folding cue, a jointed cue, you know, and had all wrapped up in leather case.
Yeah,
in the pocket or anything. He come in and he wanted to play a game of pool. He would play personal, no small stuff. He's a big shot. Well, I didn't have $100. He wanted to play for $100, see. So the boys around there, this Miller guy that was telling you about, see, he put in 50, I think. And that's what I had, about $10 or $20. And the guy at another place put in the rest, see. Another guy, he goes up and gets it, brings his cue in, screws it in, you know. He says, who's breaking? I said, we'll flip for a break. We flip. He broke. He had the break. I run them all down to him. He unscrews his cue. Well, I was running and saying, no, Mary, don't get married. I'm just fast enough to take this.
I like this.
I thought that was fun. We never seen it.
Did he pay his $100?
Yeah, that was on the line. They had
to put it on the line.
That's what I mean. I had a hard time turning up on her.
How about the Canadian champion?
Well, that was long off. That was about 1911 or 12.
Didn't you have a place then down there?
Huh?
You were managing a pool.
I was managing the Elgin Pool on the Elgin Hotel at that time. And this guy came into Larry Pool. He was the champion of Canada. So the Greek, Jimmy...
afterwards you've got that big bakery there. Anyway, Kim Donnie, Smitty says, I got a towel for you. There are your words to that thing. He's champion of Canada. He wants to play. He won game 100 points in pool. Well, I says, what's the odds and what's the deal? Why should you can be on it?
Oh.
He said I could beat him. Jimmy
I get that.
Corrales. Do you remember Jimmy Corrales?
I never met him.
He had a Paramount victory after that. Leon played for his daughter's marriage. That's the only time I've seen him, but 10 or 15 years after that. Leon told me one time when we were on Washburn Ring.
Yeah.
She had to go and play.
They're related to Manson Rockets, Corral.
Anyway, yeah. Well, I think that's him. Well, anyway, she told me she had to play for his daughters or granddaughters or niece or something like that. Or wedding. Well, anyway, we went over there, and here was Jimmy Crouch. Smitty! You know how they bring up Smitty! And then, when they all look at me, she says, no way, no, it's yours, old buddy of mine.
It's a little pure liquor, but...
No.
I don't drink,
Ray,
you know that.
Well, I think it's about 1909. I come down here, and down in the basement of the Horse and Nicholas, they had a big pool in there. A game advertised between their French champion, I don't remember what his name was, he was a dopey, and some other guy. They were pretty bad. Three cushion billiards seats, what was that? I like three cushion billiards, they couldn't play too good, but I'll learn something, see, so I goes down there. I go down early. Here's two guys shooting on the pool table. They're shooting the balls around, see? So I applauded some big shots. Do you want to get in? You know, they asked me. I said, yeah, I want to get in. Boy, they knocked them balls in something terrible. And they laughed at me. They were the two guys that were playing, see? And one guy was, he was terrible, Merrill. I shoot pretty good, but them guys just shoot out of the world, you know. Hit the ball and go in. Well, one of the guys after about 2 or 3 years after he was a dopey, he was a speaker of the chapter. I was playing that kind of company. Here it comes from Florida. You know, soup from salt. But I got a kick out of it anyway. They got a kick out of me, so you think.
Were they French? Were they French?
One of them was French and the other was...
What do those guys do? Just tour through the country and clean up on the...
That's right. I got one of this guy, I can't remember his name, I got his formula. He had a card printer on three cushion shots.
Huh?
So he gets these, many of you took this and you study. That's three cushion shots, if you can work that out. Remember, Ray, one time in the plane there, when I shot a ball, went around, I told you to come back in that corner. I said all the way around back in that corner. You and I and Laura played together. That was one shot he taught me. Don't blame me for that. That was him.
You're a darn good shooter. I could never beat a triple king. Never in my life. I couldn't beat him no matter whether he was high as a post. I could never beat him.
I love a good pool player.
I do too, but I could never beat he drove them all out of there. Even now, they won.
Well, who's he got to play now? Has he got anybody to play now?
Well, they're a little skeptical now. Lane Crowder, about 1910, 12, Snyder's, when they had the drugstore, they had pool rooms on it. I was barred in there. You know, I'd go in and break up the games. I'd take the money. They didn't like that. They want to keep the games going, so they get the money. But that was years ago.
Yeah,
professional, you know what I mean? Real professional come in, they take me.
Hey!
Radisson.
The Radisson. But he had to have a special room?
He had to have a special apartment, he had a special bathtub.
Well,
I don't think the guy took a bath for a year.
He couldn't get in it, could he?
Well, I was a master.
Mrs. Cruz, do you remember her?
Mrs. Cruz?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She and I are pretty good pals.
Judy, listen. If you girls want to make noise, go in the kitchen and play. Go on. You can go in the kitchen and make as much noise as you like.
She put in a special bathtub for him. We decorated that.
Did it have a door in it so you wouldn't have to step in it, or what?
Well,
I know. See, I get in a bathtub.
I don't think you even took a bath. You're a dirty guy anywhere, isn't you, Ray? Republican, much better.
Well, you never took a political bath, anyway.
I got a kick out of it. Thanks, you had me. Very good.
Judy, get over here and get in bed. Come on. Now.
I don't have a wallpaper and two rooms in their apartment. The little gold birds flying around. See?
Gold birds.
And I spent 3 days touching up the gold birds. No kidding. Just touching up the wings of where they fly.
Every gold bird, I had it.
And I did it.
And did Mr. Taft appreciate it?
Huh? She was a good. You know, one time they took him out there in the Republican, didn't like him, he got in the Republican community and made him talk from the manure spreader.
Oh, Dad?
Brian. He says that was the only time he had to talk. He was forced to talk from a Republican.
That's wonderful. Why haven't the Democrats used
it? He was my buddy. I met Brian a couple times.
I know your wife.
You shall not crucify them on the cross of the Lord. And out in that place that I told you about, Tacoma Park, where they took that great old man, Jane. He spoke there. That was in 1908, I think.
What was Brian like?
Huh?
I mean, how was Brian to meet him?
He was so good. In my estimate, of course, I was a kid, I couldn't find him. But I think he was like. He had everybody's interest in heart. The Republicans, the Democrats, and the populists. Well, in between. So when they couldn't figure out the Republican and Democrat, they voted populist.
Get your back in there.
See that that guy in North Dakota, Rang, what's his name?
Right.
Is he still running?
Yeah, he's.
Oh, yes, that guy.
He's pretty good too. He's an individualist, but
he's pretty good.
Well, that's a populist party, and what other party? He was the only guy in the out there in the range.
Sitting Bull? Did you ever, what about Laughing Horse? I thought he was a... He was a less of white man's
Crazy
Indian.
Horse.
Crazy Horse, I mean.
I think he was a Republican.
He was a Cheyenne,
wasn't
he? Crazy
Horse.
But... No, he was a Dakota. It's just
it. You'll still do it. But she's our best writer. Like Arthur was our best defender. He helped me and he helped Pa, and he never told you about either of them, I guess. I don't think he told you about me or about Pa, but he showed Pa's money back to him. He said, keep it. Didn't he tell Mary though about
it? I went up there. I got in the jam on a car deal, and they picked me up on a hospital reel. Who was it?
It was a depression time.
Yeah, but by the way, they attached my car. I had a Packard, 4 years old. I needed it for hauling tools and stuff, and I was getting a job. So I went up to him. Well, he says, they can't do that. Well, I said, I don't know, but I said, they done it all right. They got me off. So I laid a $10 bill on the table in front of him. Well, he says, listen, Mr. Smith, he says, show the ten. We'll wait to see what he says. Listen, they don't work together. I showed it back to him. You know, he wouldn't take that $10 bill.
And he needed it too, I'll tell you that.
I left it there, man.
Yeah, what a wonderful idea. Yeah. Something like that.
Gee, I read letters.
That's a wonderful.
I read letters of Arthur's, you know, in his papers,
yeah.
You know, where he just didn't have any money, you know, from the 30s on.
Yeah.
You know, he's begging people for $7.50 or $2 for the fees that he's paid for them.
Yeah.
And not even for a fee, but just what he's paid out, you know, for
I
the...
Know, I know.
And he really scrambled.
It's the same thing in my business. When they can't, you know, you want to fight for them, but they don't want to fight for themselves. That's terrible. That's an anger, you know. Like a lot of people who try to help, I like Bill Jackson. If he just stand on his feet, I'd be all right.
How about this Negro family you've been doing all their work for?
Yeah, well, that's what I mean.
They spotted and want to charge them a thing.
They got neighbors on both sides, hostile,
they
break their windows and everything else.
They broke mud against the place the other day. I went up there and Pa told me to bring them some tomatoes and apples, you know, for nothing and all that. The other people around there throw things against
Ray.
The
Where
house.
Is that?
Ray.
It's up there. What is 28th and Pleasant, isn't it?
28th.
Pa does all their work and he charges them hardly a penny. They can't find anybody else who will do their work.
Ray, you remember when she was waiting along, you changed that screen on the door there? You see the people next door?
I
thought like going over there.
I know, I felt the same way.
And they're nice people. Barrel, you go in there, and they got pictures all over the wall of Christ crucified and all them crucifixion pieces. Wonderful people, you know.
They're just very nice people. We brought them greenings for pie.
Yeah.
You know, Betty picked some special greenings for them all. That's a sickening thing.
I don't get it.
Right up in the middle of here did you have that kind of attack.
28th and DuPont.
They throw mud against their places now. I never thought you got that excited about me. Masa, you sat down in a chair and didn't say anything. You heard I was in New York, and I think that.
No, that was funny. Mario, I was working out here.
Badly hit, I guess.
I was working out here in a place. And the woman's boy got killed over from the cross street. So I come home that night, you know, I was kind of depressed. I walk in the back door. And the wife was all smiles, see. Well, I thought, you know, she was trying to put on the little gas bill or the telephone or something. So I walked in. So I got some good news. I said, what is it? The gas bill cut down or what? So I grabbed the paper. He says, Ray's in New York. And he called up. I think you couldn't. I called his eyes, and I dropped the paper. No kidding, I did. I didn't get it.
Because
I was worried about that guy, Mary. No kidding, I was.
So was I.
Yeah.
They got a lot of the men in my
family. And your dad was, too. I know that from my children's room.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, Arthur was one. I can remember in this room when we had a meeting with the association of the field here. Arthur sitting there. I mean, it's a different thing. I think you have to have elder statesmen. You should have statesmen. Because it gives you a sense of what the whole business is. Stream, and that's going to one, and all those people. You remember when the association organized that thing? Where they had, that was about the last thing they did when I was secretary. We organized this thing where we had a conference of the association, and the party, and the trade union. So they met. I was in the credentials committee, and Freeman was on it. There was somebody from the FFL. And when they had when the people came in there, Freeman wrote in somebody's name. That's no kidding. That's an actual fact. He wrote in somebody's name. And I found it, and I called this guy, and I said, well, look at that. And that's one of Humphrey's men. It's not on the thing. Yeah, it is. He says, we'll tell the sergeant at arms to exclude him. So he called Freeman and asked him, what about that? He said, well, I don't know if you got him. And I hear Humphrey hollering in the hall, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. That's no kidding. Right in the hall at that moment. That's no kidding. Boy, I tell you, that's Freeman. That's that bunch, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's that bunch. And that guy, we had the sergeant at arms. Today we lost the power. We didn't have it anymore. It was gone.
Can you step over the house?
Right to your right there.
Right there.
Yeah, that really got...
Why don't you guys go to sleep so you can go to school?
a religious objection, I wouldn't be saying that at all, because that's given up the idea of the ministry. So I had taken the ground that war was socially wrong. I had got back a letter from the board saying that that was not a ground that was acceptable. And the war was socially wrong, that was not acceptable. So I went to see Arthur. And he told me that in the First World War he had never lost a case. You know, and that he had fought through the conscientious objectors from all grounds. And I told him with Chamberlain in England, Daladier in France, that situation of I was against the war, but that I could not. They had written me a letter saying if you would take a religious position, we might be able to handle it. I had written back and said, I can't take a religious position. I don't have religious scruples against the war. I have social scruples. You know, the war is wrong. So Arthur told me, well, he had quite a thought in his office. And I asked him, what would Debs do? And I think that's one of the most wonderful things that ever happened to me with Arthur told me. Because I'd asked Rory once his death. He had told me, do whatever will get you out of it. And I had that faith in myself. And I'd asked Judge Day down at the Minneapolis courthouse, and he had come out in black robes and stood with this Boston Jefferson and said to me, save yourself, Ray. Well, you know, you can't live with yourself in wartime. If you're a young man and somebody says, save yourself, you can't live with yourself. When I came to Arthur, he never said anything like that to me at all. He said, if you decide to fight the war, he said, I'm your attorney. He said, I didn't lose a case in the First War, but I won them all. He told me later at what cost, you know, it was considerable. But he said,
what do you mean, what cost?
Well, you know, all the struggle and the grief that it came. But, and I said, what would Debs do? He said, Debs would never have joined the army. He said, Debs would never. And so what would you do? He said, I would go with the people. He said, if the people are there, Arthur said, I would go there. You know, and I thought over, I thought Arthur was right. I thought, that's where to go. I said, go with the people. And the strange thing is that less than a year and a half later, I was defense counsel and won most of my cases for the people.
He did win the army. Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah. Oh, Ray, you should write that.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing, Arthur, because, you know, he didn't kill us. I was defense counsel for the thing, and I had a man who was just had gone on sleep on duty in my yard. Well, I had beat what I thought before was the worst case I would ever have. But I didn't get that. I got that by legal means. But this case, I couldn't beat it. I had all company commanders. Pi, you know what that is. Mm-hmm. And I had tried to beat them by doing what nobody had ever done before me. I had challenged off the court for cause. Not only my first challenge, but the major, who was the supreme guy on the court, and the trial judge advocate, you know, told me you can't challenge the major off the court. He said, you're going to get it if you do. I said, well, I do challenge him off the court. So I challenged the major off as my second challenge, got him off the court. Well, then I thought I had the ground cleared because they had one man, Conway, on the court, the first lieutenant was a friend of mine. And I knew that he would work for the men, you know, he would try this. But I knew he was out of trouble by three company commanders. See, that day I worked, I mean, it took us all afternoon in there, but I fought hard, and I knew that the colonel had broken me already because he had smashed the court that I had won my last case. He broke the court after I won my last case. Made me feel I should have been an attorney. No way. Because I broke him by illegal maneuvers. That's no kidding. I read
you
the whole
thing.
I run the whole, got the whole thing. But this, I couldn't get this guy off, you see. I couldn't get him off. So they got him 6-6.
Oh.
which is 6 months hard labor and 6 months two-thirds forfeiture of pay, you know, which is the maximum they could impose. So you know what I did right away? I figured they got me here, you know, at the battalion. I can't get them. So I jumped in a Jeep. I had a driver waiting, and I shoved up the division. You know, got in division. And I got into the division judge advocate. Told him the whole story. And he suspended the whole damn thing. They called it back. They called it back to battalion. I came back in the evening there, you know, in the desert, you know, with the sun coming down. When I got down there opposite the tent where this guy was, these guys were dancing on their, they were dancing on their bunks, you know. I was a god almost. They were just dancing up and down. That was a beautiful thing. It wasn't just the Germans, I mean, it was within our battalion. The colonel and his people had driven all the Jews out. Yeah, it was the same kind of thing, and all the people in the battalion were Jewish and all, were just driven out. I didn't do any other thing they did, but, you know, outside the battalion. They included about three-fourths of the staff when I came in there. Three-fourths of them were driven out. That's no kidding. And the commanding officer who came in, Mailer, was not only anti-Semitic, he was anti-Roosevelt. He made anti-Roosevelt statements. So when I came in one time to a dinner when we were in the South, a Southern visiting colonel said, we shouldn't have these Negroes in the Army on equal status. He said, if we do, he says, I'll go back in the South and think I was as good as anybody. I got up and slapped my napkin on the plate and walked out. I was the only officer who did it. I walked right out of the tent. I wouldn't take them in a court-martial. And why, I hope to God he does. Because if he does, you know, I've got an awful lot of things he said about the commander-in-chief of the Army that I want to bring up. Well, of course, he never court-martialed me. But what got me was Bishop from Alabama saying, Ray, it's as if he court-martials you, I want to defend you. And I had beat him the week before on one of his own men. On one of his own men. And he was mad as hell at me because I cleared him on a charge that Bishop got him at. You know, but it amazed me, a Southerner.
Well, you're going against the Army practicing, you know. I think it takes a hell of a lot.
Men love you, I can tell you that. I had to the end of my time in the Army a real love for men. All the time.
Well, that's worth it.
Yeah, it's worth it. There isn't any commission for more than that.
That's for sure.
There. When I resigned the badge, and he said, release your prejudice. It was written on your face. And the whole section told me they'd resign if I quit. But no, I said, yeah. Look after your job, it will give you nothing. You know, it was a different part. All different. I'm through with the wars. I'm finished.
You know,
what are you talking about? He said, didn't you throw the people out of their village, out of their houses down there? And yes, we did. We had to take them. Said, well, you know what they're doing here? I said, no. He said, well, he says, 15 minutes ago, I was downstairs, and he said, our colonel was meeting the people in this house, bowing to them, and telling them that he would keep people out of the third floor and out of their hunting lodge so they could move down there. These were our enemies. That's no kidding. I said, well, he threw these people out of their houses. He said, oh, that's different. He says, these are the well-to-do people in Germany. He's the people that, yeah, that they're going to have an alliance with after the war. And they had that alliance, of course. Yeah. They made it. And Curtin was just sick at heart. I'm not kidding. He was just sick. He says,
Ray.
I'm through. He says, I'm
Ray.
Not going out anymore.
Ray.
There. He
Ray.
Says, they, he says they tell us, he says, and then they come in here. And he said, you throw the poor people out of their houses, take what you want. We come up here, the commander-in-chief bows to the people. Somebody else sweeps the stairs. And they're promised their third floor won't be disturbed. In the middle of a war, mind you. And then they're given safe conduct to their hunting lodge so that they can survive, the Prussian militarists. And this was in the middle of a war.
I mean, how can people doubt a class theory of history against that? I can't see it. I mean, it occurred, it's insane. I went down there. I told that guy, I said, stop sweeping those stairs. He said, I can't. He said, a court martial. As I tell you, stop sweeping them. I said, this is a German, a militarist house. I said, you're not going to sweep those stairs down there. I mean, what a ridiculous thing. An American soldier sent to fight the enemy, sweeping the house. And they've been doing that ever since in Germany.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I mean, it's enough to drive you insane. And do you know at that same time, Paul, what was happening in Spain? There was a meeting.
Yeah.
There was a meeting of the Germans, the Italians, the Spanish, the American financiers, and so-called neutral Spain, the head of division fighting. They were deciding how to protect their international property. Oh, you
Raiders.
We should have sent two divisions. If we had sent three armored divisions to Spain, we could have smacked Franco. If we had sent three armored divisions down there, we could have broken it. We never sent them.
Garrett Grader is out of town.
Huh?
Garrett Grader.
No, but I mean, really, Pop, if we had sent armor down there, we could have broken
Spain. Garrett Grader, the commander of the German Navy, is out now. He's in prison.
He's out.
Well, what about that? We've imported their scientists, given them big jobs, the people who destroyed half of the earth.
They don't mean right now. They don't mean a thing right.
You've given them big jobs on our
Which
one? All around there was the German fires, you know. And I came up and I had to come back. And I came back and I had with me about four of my own vehicles and one of the Catholic chaplains. Father Trainer was one of the most wonderful men I ever met, Catholic. I mean, a man, by God, well, someday I will tell you two or three stories about Trainer and me, you know, about bad times. Whenever we had split the column and we sent a task force somewhere, you know, on the main course, I sent my supporting officer with the other one, and I went the other one, and Trainer always went with, you know, the Protestant chaplain. Jewish chaplain were always playing cards. You know, they couldn't be bothered. But the Catholic chaplain always went with me. That was our, you know, our setup trainer, always went along. He always had a bottle of whiskey in his flask. You know. Well, this one night the attack didn't materialize, and I was told to come back, and I came back to an area that we didn't know at all, and on roads that I had to read, you know, almost without knowing what was happening. And I came to this one town, and I saw a peep sitting in front of that town with the antenna up and an officer with a carbine across his knee. It was Lieutenant Brandenburg, who was my personnel officer in the old 4th Cavalry. It was that moment when you recognized each other. I'd seen him last in South Dakota. You see, when I come up, we look up at each other, our helmets lift. We look, and I see Brandenburg with a carbine and the antenna, you know, in Germany, and here I am. You know, it was a fantastic moment. Brandenburg was Ray. He said, Lieutenant Brandenburg. You guys, they got me out here. He says, the Germans are all over. You know, we could see their light all over there. And he has this antenna. And I said, well, what's happened to the 4th Cavalry? He's even cut apart. I said, what happened to Bredemus? He said, well, he's commanding now, like my old adjutant. But I really loved Bredemus in the South. You know, I used to drink whiskey with him at night in Louisiana, Tennessee. He says, Bredemus, he says, geez, you wouldn't know him. He says, his face is cut with worry. He says, they've been shooting us up so much. He says, they've cut us apart. You know, they were reconnaissance. He says, Brandenburg had just shot the people. Well, that was a strange moment. Wasn't it fun to see a regiment like that on your front in a situation like that? It's just a little wild, you know. They were cut up very badly. I think Stryker must have been killed there, because when the 4th Cavalry met at Andrews Hotel some years ago, trying to find out about Stryker, nobody knew about him.
Oh, those letters of yours about Stryker.
That
in itself was...
Stryker wasn't killed because he was a wonderful soldier. Yeah. He said, sure, he started.
Well, he must have been a... I
suppose he was killed there. They lost an enormous percentage. They were screening us.
in a very bad area there, you know, and screening and that stuff by cavalry. That's where all our casualties came out.
Well, we're lucky he came back, huh?
That's for sure. That's for sure.
Oh, well. And yet the beautiful moments I saw, Abrams and Lizzie.
Abrams,
21st is
the
land of
us,
you know. But Abrams, you know, and the Germans, their last big tank attack in the West. At night I had to get out of there any way I could, you know, any way I could figure out. But Abrams, boy, that guy, that great guy.
Yeah, he is good. I've been a great soldier. You ain't kidding. Yeah, he was one of the best. For an Irishman with a Jew name, he had
there. He was an Irishman,
too.
Yeah. Well, I can remember Maridel back in 1940, 41, when I went into the Army. She said, if I were a man, I would never go in
there.
She told me, you threw your arms around me and said, if I were a man, I would never enter the Army. That was your womanhood.
Yeah.
I don't think I would. I don't think I could ever get into an army.
I know I wouldn't.
Oh, well, you would have been a better soldier than I was.
You know, right now, I'm
going to be a hell of a lot better soldier than I was.
Can't run, I can't fight, but I am.
You would have fought, but you would have had. And as a matter of fact, after Arthur told me that, I came to Kalman. They had a state assembly of pacifists and war resisters. I was the only person there who spoke against resisting the war. The only one. Group. I told them to go into the army. The grounds that Arthur had told me. And they let me speak. They were very polite.
I wish I had had their pet.
Did you enjoy your children when they were young?
Yeah.
That means you see a lot of them, or were you busy? Gone?
I see quite a bit. I take time off for that. I think they're wonderful.
The only wealth is people. That's the only wealth.
Sure. Yeah.
Is Ray's grandmother that he's so fond of, is that your mother or your wife's mother? The grandmother that Ray is so fond of. Is that your mother or your wife's mother?
Wife's mother.
Oh, it's your
sweet people.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's your two things.
Huh?
You love
you bet I did. You're a wonderful character.
She was, to me, the world.
Yeah.
I think still is in lots of ways, but the sun goes around
for me. It was nice.
I never saw anybody like her. I mean, in all those times that I spent with her, all those summers, I never heard her say a mean word about anything. Never. Yeah, she had the land that she had helped with her own hands to break, taken away from her. I never heard her say a mean word, but, I mean, that's not necessarily a virtue, but I mean, in her case, she made it a virtue because of the way she was about other things.
Well, who took it away? She lost her depression?
They lost her depression.
Ray will tell you.
Oh, I remember those times. The most beautiful moments, I think, of my youth were there when we would thresh flax. You know, I've been sitting on the lawn there, you know, with bunches for us, and the flax would go slowly. We'd come in, you know, and turn it on and toss our bundles off. It had maybe an hour between our loads there with flax, you know, at the end of the threshing. Yes.
Yeah, Ray was her favorite. And she was Ray's favorite.
I know.
Yeah, she was nice. Awful nice.
There's never anybody like it. It's such a hard one for everyone.
Biggest of all.
And never a complaint about her own position. It seems so funny.
Yeah. They were up at, Green Lake. With a daughter there. So I drove up there one time, you see, and her daughter was taking care of her, she was in the nursery. I drove up there one time and I talked about Coca-Cola, you know, that come in, that was big then, and then the Coca-Cola. So I stopped and I thought, well, Coca-Cola. I want whiskey, you know that. So I stood on one night and finally took the Violet, the nurse there, her daughter. I said, well, I'm going to take Grandma down to Walmart. We'll get a Coca-Cola. All right? Okay, so go ahead. So we drove down there, we got a Coca-Cola. Why did you get a bag out of that? We had two, in fact, didn't we? Weren't you there? No, you weren't there. Boy, it was with Grandma all being used to smile. That was the best thing that happened. I was 13.
But where?
I met the wife down here, and then we drove up to farm on time. I met her up there.
Her farm, or your
their,
farm?
Their farm.
Oh.
Up to Walmart. They had a farm in halfway between Wilmer and Olivia. Svea.
Mm-hmm.
Little town Svea.
None of you ever talk much about her. I saw her just once, but you don't hardly mention her.
My
wife?
Yeah, I mean.
If you don't believe me, that's why I take it up for, you know.
Yeah.
That's but where you stop, that's bad.
She must be a lonesome woman, in a way.
No, I don't think so. She's just all right. She complains a little.
Well, I think she should. You don't even mention her. Ray doesn't mention her either.
She should. She does.
She does.
She's right, Mary Jo. If it wasn't for her, I'd be alone. No kidding.
Mm-hmm.
Put some brakes on me. Okay, Ray told you about me playing pool, okay? You know, I'm not so smart. I get in the pool game. That's it. Some guy might take me. I play cards a little bit already. Very little.
Yeah, you're not very good at cards.
No,
you're a lot better at
pool. Well, there you are. So the wife watched me. She's smart. I give her credit.
And what's she doing all the time you're playing pool? She's been sitting there with the kids, you know.
She goes to church and prays at the
house. She prays for you, huh? Well, maybe some of your luck is on it. She brings you.
Was sitting knitting over this oil lamp, and this wonderful light the oil lamps give. Our lights don't give it, but the oil lamps give on the farm. You know, Father, even light, I mean, we don't get that anymore.
No.
That's no kidding. I mean, there's something logged of what you get. And Grandma was sitting there rocking, and Father was complaining about something up in the farm. Grandma said, I'm 81 and I still look forward. That was such a beautiful thing. It's the only thing she said. But I mean, there's no need to say anything more. You know, everything was gone.
How many children
did
she have?
Six or seven. About seven.
What was your mother?
Three
children.
Where did she live?
She's Leon's favorite.
In Dakota.
He's still alive?
No. 37.
But she was my sister's favorite. My sister's favorite was on her
family. She's a musician. She liked music.
Oh, did she? Did she play something?
Yeah. Piano.
Were you born in Dakota? Well, I don't know. I think sometimes these women have a long history and saga that is not known, you know, of these. I mean, women don't go out and play pool or have a drink or, you know, there they are with the kids.
That's what I've been telling my wife that, too. But she don't listen to me. If I could get my wife in one good pool game, I could lick her, I bet.
Oh, well.
Oh, dear. Oh, here we go.
Well, I hope you really weren't going to lick her, but that you could.
Well, before I met your mom, I never had a dime. I had a dime, but I spent it, you know. But after that, she took all of it. I ain't got too much now, but she got it for me. I give her credit. She put the brakes on me. And that's what it took.
It took, huh?
That's right. Especially when you got children.
I'm not going to say I don't love Arthur, because I do. I mean, I followed him more than any man I ever knew.
You can say that again.
Well, I would do the same thing. He never had a penny in his life.
He had a great heart, a wonderful heart. I know his father, he wouldn't let him pay him for what he did. It's a wonderful thing, isn't it, Father? It's a wonderful thing to come across.
Most of them are just grabbing a little fans.
Yeah, he would not take it.
Yeah,
he was to me, too. I mean, Arthur was the only man that told me the truth. I mean, when I tried so hard to find out the truth. They never told it to me, and Maury Winters wouldn't talk to me. The only person was Arthur that I knew who ever told me. Whoever gave me something in lines that I could understand or follow. He treated me like a man.
That's right.
He told me things.
I was glad he popped up there.
That's wonderful.
They
still.
That helps my ego. Who's got
ego? It helps mine too. I'm glad that they won't let you do it.
That's right.
Let's
get watch your step, AJ.
That's right. We got the know-how and the daring do, they got to watch out for us.
They still look at us,
We'll get that ball in the pocket, boy.
The guy up there.
That ball will go in the pocket.
Where is that place? About 78th and Lindale the other day, Bob.
Yeah.
He stopped up there. That guy said he wasn't going to play you.
Well, they know him all over, 78th and Lindale. You know what? I'd rather have that honor in this town than...
I get it,
I don't know what, than what? Than be Freeman or the mayor or...
Yeah, that's right.
That's right. That's the skill. No doubt about that. I sure can't see it.
It's an act of imagination, too.
And knowing what to do, where to do it, it's an art.
And knowing who to do it against, not being intimidated by your enemy.
No, Pa was never intimidated. You remember in the flame last fall, Pa, when that guy was selling that stuff came up and I shoved it back at him? I was kind of high. And I imagine he would have knocked me out, but I was standing there with my side, to the side. And he came around the bar. I didn't even see him. The next thing I know, Pa was on my right there, So you come any closer, he's not going to swing on you. You would have got me, Pa. That guy would have quit me if you had been there.
What did he do? He came behind you.
Yeah, well, he did. He was trying to shove some kind of thing on us there to contribute to.
Oh.
If we want to contribute, we're going to contribute.
He was in bad company very
little. Yeah, we were both, though. I was kind of belligerent, Well, I didn't even see him come around. Did you see him come around there, Pa?
He came down there.
He came down very fast. On the other side. Oh, really? I came in there one night, belligerent as hell, and they were all, in there. And I came in there, I don't know what's wrong with me, it was too high, and I came in and said something about some painting. And I saw Gordon fading back toward the door, flaming himself, and I figured there was going to be a long fight. And I just got thrown out of the university club for a fight. And Gordon was bracing back there. And one time I had to laugh, I had two or three hands in front of me. A little bit, because I remember the 30s when we had to fight our way out up on Washington Avenue to the Gordon with all his good
luck. There never is a character.
Thank
Gordon.
Well, isn't Gordon wonderful, though?
You were going to say
he's the one.
He is? To me, he's really a wonderful, wonderful thing.
Early worm catches
us. Well, Pa's always been like
the early worm catches us.
From the beginning of my life, Pa's always been.
Ray and I have been buddies. I'm proud of him.
Well, it's nothing better than to have a midnight sun. you can talk to, in the midnight. Who doesn't? He doesn't lecture you in the midnight, and tell you to be better, to be worthier, to be.
Yeah, he's been a good boy.
Oh, he's not a good boy. He's a terribly bad boy, but that's why he's so good.
Is that what it is?
He's so bad, he's so good.
He's still my buddy. He's still my buddy. We're going to keep it that way.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing. Well, look at all these little angels sleeping. Isn't that wonderful?
Where's the other one?
They're so quiet.
There's three.
There's another one out here. I hear coughing.
How do I count?
I better look at this coughing one.
I wonder where you're at. Is that cute, Ray?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I wish I was back there again. I don't know why, but it's an idea. They are cute, Ray. The best people there are. Look out for them, Ray. Take care of them and take care of yourself. When you get old, you appreciate that again. More than dollars, that's enough.
I love children when they're asleep. I love them much better when they're asleep.
When they're asleep?
Yeah.
You like that? You love
me. Give me that, Ray, if you're going. I'm chilly without it, and I'll give it back to you. Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I love that story of South America. That seems so beautiful to me. I mean, the poets there, you know, were writing into that, you know, need for poets, and not knowing at all. Oh.
Marital
love, you think that is?
Oh, yeah.
You know, we say America. It means a very narrow strip.